Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go.
Let's go.
We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go.
Let's go.
You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the zone.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Trout's ready. 3-2.
He struck him out. Ohtani strikes out Trout, and Japan's back on top of the baseball world.
You're in the zone on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
When I looked in the mirror this morning, I barely recognized myself. Someone was there looking back at me, but who? A stranger, truly. Because of what I did last night. Did something last night, woke up this morning, couldn't believe who I was anymore. We've all had those moments, I'm sure. But last night, March 21st, I watched baseball. And I loved it. I've lost my moral compass, my true north, my personality. Everything is so unsettled within me right now. I don't even know how to rationalize all this. But the World Baseball Classic finally got to me. We're in the midst of March Madness. We've still got plenty of NFL free agency stuff going on. The NFL season never really stops. The draft is basically an hour and a half away, which is exciting. But last night, the thing that got the TV screen was baseball. In March. I watched baseball in a hoodie. That's not typically when my baseball fever strikes. I mean, by the time the season actually comes around, I usually am able to, you know, have some excitement there until maybe the Royals lose a few and we can go back to an old, if you want to go find the old liner for later on in the show, beards of a very brief amount of time we had of, I think it was a Royals White Sox opening day, Danny Duffy opening day starter.
Oh, yep.
So this was 4 or 5 years ago down in ESPN Kansas City.
Yep.
I was finding my fun, you know, getting excited for the Royals season to come. And then it, you know, as we were live on air discussing our hope for better times,
I think
it was a bomb home run off Danny Duffy.
If I remember correctly, what happened was you went, they're going to blow it.
Yeah.
And then half a second later was a two-run home run.
We see if we can unearth that one for next segment to just, because that is typically my experience of early season baseball. I grew up with baseball as my favorite sport. It was my absolute favorite. I was a Yankees fan because my dad was a Yankees fan. I think he was a Yankees fan because his older brother was a Reds fan. There was just some little brother syndrome going on there. They lived in Wichita. There was no real excuse for any of this. But then I at least had the advantage of growing up and really loving those late 90s, early 2000s Yankees. The Diamondbacks expansion was right around that time. My grandparents were in Arizona at the time. I had lots of, you might hear this as me being like a horrific bandwagoner or something. I can't account for what my 8-year-old self was doing. That guy was an idiot.
As compared to now.
I mean, I will say in the last 20 years, I've developed a little. Not a lot. My rain jacket has leopard print on it, so that's not a joke. That's what it sounds like, so you know it's not a bit. But I really had this deep love of baseball. And then when the Royals made their World Series runs, you know, the city embraced it again in a way that was really fun and rejuvenating again. But in the years since, I have just so fully been enveloped by football, with absolutely no complaints, because at this point I would say the NFL is my favorite league, football is my favorite sport to talk about, to watch, all to cover all of those things. But sometimes baseball just takes a little while, and by the time it gets warm out, I'm excited to have baseball back. Honestly, also, I hadn't really considered this, but for the last several years, doing almost entirely sports at night here on 810, back in the olden days, we were opposite baseball a lot, so we were watching games on mute on a second screen while we were doing explicitly non-baseball talk, because, you know, it was happening already. And so I just had a different relationship with baseball over the last few years. Kind of wondering if there is a room for that love to be rekindled somewhere in here in my Grinch heart that shrunk two baseball sizes since the Royals went 500 the year after the World Series. Might have been one game below or below or above. I think they were total one game below 500 those 2 years after, if memory serves. But 500 baseball in some ways is even more soul-sucking than bad baseball with young guys, because you can at least look to the future. We've been selling ourselves on that for a while, and, you know, when Royals season comes around, actually right now, riding the freaking wave of last night, I'm kind of... I don't want to say I'm full fever pitch excited. But I'm like, hey, you know what? We're going to baseball in about a week. That's pretty cool. Glad to have you back, baseball. But let me explain what I think happened last night. So I tweeted like in the, I don't know, fifth or sixth inning or something. I was not there from the first inning, which is welcome to my experience with baseball. I was there pretty... No, actually I was. I had it on mute for a chunk of it because I was playing video games. That's what it was. Which, Beards, by the way, I saved this until the show started. I put it down for real crunch time, but through the first five or six innings of the World Baseball Classic, I finally started playing Borderlands 3. I finally begun. I have it on my Steam Deck now. It is a weird thing to jump back into Borderlands and to feel so comfortable in it, like you've been in this world before, and also like there's some little new stuff.
You're welcome.
I'm excited. Borderlands 2 is one of my most played games ever. I played that game a ton. And then my PC couldn't run 3. I got the Steam Deck now. I will say, Beards, here's my quick review that's not even... We'll do shot clock reviews with Mick Schaefer at 1, but I've got another thing I want to review, so I'll go ahead and sneak in my video game take here now. There were like 3 times when I went, you know, I think I'm probably done. I haven't played the looter shooters in a while. I think I'm all right. I'm going to go and put the Steam Deck down, focus on the baseball. And like one little thing would just get its hook in me. Okay, fine. I'll go over to see what's going on over here. I'll see what's happening. Here come the Skags. It got its claws back in me a little bit. And I know it's working because I'm now talking about Borderlands 3 thinking, oh, man. I wish I could play Borderlands 3 and do this radio show. With the Steam Deck, I mean, there's a chance. It would be worse as a radio show, but...
Just so you know, who would tell? I have Xbox, you have a Steam Deck. We can crossplay on that.
Can we do crossplay?
I think so.
Ooh, I think you're right. Actually, I didn't set up the account because I was just trying to get to the game, but it was like, yo, set up crossplay. I think you're right. I think we can. Well, that's exciting. I'm playing as Flack, the Beastmaster. Is that who you were also playing as?
Yes.
Okay, that's...
I've got multiple, but yes.
That's good. Okay, fantastic. I could not be the character with a pet, a killer pet. How was I not going to be Flack? That game's been out for like a year, maybe more now. I'm late to it. 2 years? Beer just held up a 2. No bleep, really? Well, that's been on sale and stuff. The first like hour and a half, basically, that I played. Really fun. Felt good to be playing Borderlands again. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe I was just on a wild nostalgia kick last night. Where I was like, you know what I want to do? I want to play my favorite video game from high school, the new version of that, and just kick my feet up and enjoy some baseball. Maybe it just all came together, a perfect recipe. What I really think it was that baseball was having a Twitter moment, and we have had entire postseasons, plural, go by without really feeling like there were Twitter moments coming out of baseball. So I tweeted last night, I am watching baseball in March. And then I went and found, you know, one of those tweet prompts that's like, you've been kidnapped. Your kidnappers allow you to keep tweeting to pretend everything is all right. What would you tweet that would alarm your followers without the kidnappers knowing that you're asking for help? My answer to that could have been, hi, I'm Joshua Briscoe, and I'm watching and enjoying baseball in mid-March. It was not an alarm to my followers. It was not a cry for help. And what I think it's been, I have not gotten fully like swept up by the World Baseball Classic over this period of time. I've turned it on a couple of times, and I've seen a lot of clips on Twitter in a very social media-led content-consuming environment. I saw Randy Arozarena rob that home run and then just stare straight into the camera, absolutely expressionless, like that Mike Wazowski meme, where it's, I think, Sully's face on Mike Wazowski's body. It's perfect. Not to be confused with the former Chiefs linebacker. And so there were just so many moments, and look, we do this with the Olympics all the time. Having countries represented and all of that just adds another level. You don't have to decide who to root for more often than not, right? If you've got, you know, family that could make you eligible for different countries in your rooting interests, then sweet. You can, you know, have multiple teams, and I won't hold that against you. But I don't know my family history that well. So generally speaking, and international sporting events, I'm ready to be USA, USA guy. I'm ready for that. I was built for these moments. Soccer's great at tapping into that, obviously. The Olympics, every 2 or 4 years, depending on how much you're ready to chant USA for, you know, skiing and stuff. I like the Winter Olympics, but it's kind of the X Games Olympics a little more compared to the summer, typically, right? Is that fair, Beards? I didn't mean to just sideswipe the Winter Olympics, but you nodded.
Summer Olympics are superior.
They are, right? Yes. I mean,
there's some fun stuff in Winter Olympics, but the summer has got all of the good stuff.
Winter Olympics can feel kind of niche.
Samey.
Yeah, it's, and also kind of samey. Yeah, it's a lot of boards or skinnier boards and snow, or harder snow.
It's variations of skiing, variations of skating,
yep,
and variations of snowboarding.
That seems reasonable. I'm sure there are outliers there, but that is what it feels like. And hey, look, I also, to continue going back to memories of my sports watching childhood, I will never forget Apollo Anton Ohno. Never. I Shaun White will live in my head rent-free for the rest of time. Winter Olympians are still worthy. But they're not the sports we typically are watching. So anyway, to get that with baseball, I think helped me understand a few things and just kind of reawakened a few things. One is that the rest of the world, not all of it, but a lot of it, is generally more amped about baseball than we are. Which is just something I didn't really realize. We've had our moments of paying a little bit of attention to international baseball, but just having everybody on a relatively even world stage like this was really cool. And you get some of that international soccer-watching energy that is not often injected into baseball in America. Baseball in America gets kind of sleepy, and we even kind of treat it that way, which is okay. If I'm watching baseball, if I'm watching a day game on a Sunday, watching some Royals baseball, if I can figure out how many channels I have to, how many packages I have to buy to make this happen, I'm still not totally sure because companies are going bankrupt left and right, and I'm a little bit worried and a little bit confused, and they start pretty soon. So if we could just figure all that out, everybody, I would love to know. Where am I led to watch the Royals this year? But if I'm watching a day game on a Sunday, I don't need a Vuvuzela. It is... like mid-June, it's late July, I'm in my basement sweating. I can just, it's okay if it's just Zach Greinke throwing 85 mile an hour nonsense. I'm cool with that. But there was such a positive energy, an excited energy, games that felt like they had real stakes to them throughout the World Baseball Classic, players who were thrilled to be there, clearly. Guys who are so in the moment. And we have the at-bat last night. It was Yu Darvish and Kyle Schwarber. They're at bat. I think it was the 8th or 9th pitch that Schwarber put into the seats after somebody tweeted that it felt like Schwarber was just loading throughout that at bat. It was just huge hacks and foul balls and huge hacks and huge hacks, and then he puts one in the seats. I think it was Trey Turner who had the solo homer earlier, another just absolute bomb. That was when I was watching, but I was definitely had more of my focus on Borderlands. This is generally how I think I'm going to be watching a lot of baseball now. The Steam Deck is a revolution for watching baseball. But by the end of the game, the baseball on the TV was more exciting than the iconic looter shooter game I was playing in handheld mode. I'm not saying everything has to be measured by making sports more exciting than video games, because I know that, like, there is definitely an age group within the sound of my voice right now who is just ready to yell at the sky. I totally get it. I'm not saying these will have to be in comparison. I'm saying this is, I think, how I'm going to get through some less than ideal baseball this summer. It can be 6-2, and I can just be hanging out enjoying some ball in the background while I'm also, you know, hunting for an electric skag. It was an early mission in Borderlands 3. I needed its spine to complete a circuit. It's kind of a grisly game at times, but it's very cartoonish. You've probably seen Borderlands. Beards, if anyone right now is thinking, should I start with a Borderlands game? You just start with Borderlands 2, right? I'm not even considering going to 1. It just was not as refined.
Yes.
2 is the pinnacle.
Yes.
Okay. I want to make sure that wasn't just my clouded judgment, because I love that game. But you could not have scripted the end of the World Baseball Classic better. USA, Japan, you have stars making star plays and having star moments. And then it comes down in the 9th inning with 2 outs in a save situation. I think they said for the first time since like 2016 or something. Maybe, I think it might have been his only save situation. Shohei Ohtani comes out for the 9th. Guy gets on. Bobby Witt comes out to pinch run. Grounded into a double play. It is Ohtani, Trout, 2 outs, 9th inning. U.S. down 1. Like, in that at bat, Renee got home, and I was like, I was in like locked in sports mode, where I was kind of like, I don't even want to have to explain this right now. And then there was a pitch and a lull, and I gave the quick elevator pitch to Renee of what was happening on the screen. It was, okay, so these guys are both teammates in Major League Baseball, two of the greatest baseball players ever living. Shohei Ohtani, the pitcher, is also a great hitter and position player. Never seen anything like him. Mike Trout is an absolute alien. These are two of the best baseball players who have ever lived going head-to-head.
Also, Mike Trout on clutch.
We didn't know that for sure yet. When I was explaining it at the time, there was a chance that Mike Trout was about to, you know, play in a big moment. So far, that man's been vanquished by the Royals and Shohei Ohtani, two great forces of baseball nature. How could you expect anything else from the greatest hitter of his era? And again, one of the greatest hitters ever, who no one knows what he looks like, and no one can remember his face when he's no longer on your screen. We might talk about the Angels here in a second, because I am so mad at them. But you had really two of the, and I say of the, and not just the two, because I'm trying to leave room for maybe someone else steps up in the next couple of years, and maybe I'm glossing over some incredible players over the last few years. But I really don't think we've seen anything in recent baseball history like Mike Trout, and we've never seen Shohei Ohtani. Like, not Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth wasn't as good of a pitcher for as long as Shohei Ohtani already has been. Ohtani's not going to hit 700 homers. Never seen anything like Shohei Ohtani. Totally enthralling television. And Ohtani throws, I might have the order wrong here, but he hits 100. He hits 102. And then that last pitch that he got Trout on was absolute filth. And it felt like the world was watching that pitch. And it's one of those sports moments that I was glad I was watching, because in the moment I thought, oh, this is whatever happens here. Hopefully it's not a walk, because that would have been the most anticlimactic, I think, once the at-bat had started. This is going to be played. This clip will be on loop somewhere in Cooperstown. This clip here will be an iconic selling point for baseball for as long as baseball knows that they've got a couple of incredible generational players in Ohtani and Trout. And if you're listening to this right now and you're a baseball fan who never got in on the World Baseball Classic, again, really, last night was the first time I think I got in, and like in the first inning, now that I'm thinking back on it. Yeah, I did, because the Japanese pitcher, they had warming up in the first, so I got to give myself more credit. I watched like 8.5 innings of that game while playing Borderlands, of course, until the end. And so if you missed it and you're a baseball fan, one is that like I kind of feel bad for you, because it was the most tense moment I have felt in baseball, personally, probably since the Royals World Series, because there's not been a World Series pitch, at bat, frankly, series that has had me like nervous at home, not involving the Royals. And I was on the edge of my seat. So I don't know. I don't have some way to parlay all of this into like, and here's how baseball saves itself. Because I don't think that you can, you know, make the entire sport a individual series, country versus country, where by the end you have the tournament coming down to the two best players of their generation going head to head with one out left. You just can't do better than that. And I don't know how you parlay all of that into 162 games of making people care about your sport. But I don't know that you have to. Because I think what it did, for me at least, was remind me that that level of fun, intense baseball not only still exists, but exists for me. That I still have the capacity to feel my heart beating watching two Los Angeles Angels go head-to-head. Is that repeatable in Game 61? No, it's not. But it was a tremendous showcase for baseball, a tremendous showcase for seeing stars in an environment way, way, way more interesting than an all-star game, or certainly than spring training, obviously. But it was more compelling than the World Series has been at any point in recent memory for me. Again, non-Royals division. And that even just existing as something baseball has now, and the next World Baseball Classic, I'm going to do my darndest to not let it pass me up for the first couple of weeks or whatever. Because now I recognize that there is something for me here. And also, bleep the Los Angeles Angels. Oh my God, what is wrong with you? What? How? Angels, how? You have two Terminator cyborg aliens playing for your team. Do you know what the Angels' record was last year, Beards? Think about it. You know,
probably under 500.
Let's go ahead. Let's think about it. They have greatest player, the most fascinating player potentially in baseball history, and the greatest hitter of their generation. You only play nine guys. There are two of your nine. 162 games. How many games do you think they won last year, Beards?
Like 159.
You would think they were 73-89.
What were the Royals last
That's a
season?
Great. I was just about to Google it because I don't remember off the top of my head. I have blocked a lot of that out. 2022 Royals. It was worse. I think they didn't hit 100 losses, but it wasn't great. 65-97.
Okay. So
the Angels.
So what we're saying is, Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani are equal to about 8 wins better than the Royals.
This is exactly right. This is exactly what has happened here. Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout get you 8 wins better than last year's Royals team that prompted the firing of the president of baseball ops and manager. Now, the Angels made a change last year, too, if memory serves. So, there's levels to it. But how do you let that happen? Look, clearly, Rob Manfred is in the process of saving baseball, just like we all predicted. World Baseball Classic's tremendous. The pitch clock has had great early returns out of spring training. Clearly, Rob Manfred really is the hero we all assumed he would be this whole time. Most people could probably hear the sarcasm in my voice, but the things I have said so far have not been terribly untrue, despite the fact that I am not willing to necessarily give Rob Manfred a big crown. But if you really want to save baseball, Rob, just go David Stern the Angels. Just figure it out. Go veto a trade or force a trade. I don't care. Get them out of there. And I'm not saying that putting Ohtani and Trout on the Yankees or Mets is exactly what I would want to happen. The East Coast now instead of West Coast, and maybe that'll... I don't know what I want. I don't know what would help. The Padres have the other, next, 3 biggest stars in baseball at this point. They're also on the West Coast. Just figure out a way for Shohei Ohtani to be on a relevant team and then put him on TV so I can watch him, please. That's really all I want at this point. If I just have to follow around Ohtani, that might be good enough. But for 7 out of the 9 spots in the Angels lineup, I'm playing Borderlands. It's The Zone here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Joshua Briscoe and Beards McFly. Jason Anderson will be back tomorrow, we believe. I don't think he texted me back yet. Oh, he says, yep. Jason confirmed, back tomorrow. Jason and baseball are back.
You're in The Zone.
We're 1/324th through the season. And we are angry at the Royals, man. You gonna play this game?
Sure. What game is this? Is this the sadness game? Because I'm there.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Oh, archives of the recent past. How far we've come. It is kind of weird being at a point now where, if there was a little World Baseball Classic on my TVs in here, I wouldn't be mad at it. But I also don't think I've got any fully formed, not any, I don't think I have all of my fully formed Royals opinions at this point. Maybe they could they borrow Shohei Ohtani for a week, just the first week of the season? Maybe that's it! This just dawned on me. Here's how Rob Manfred saves baseball. Shohei Ohtani is no longer a player for the Los Angeles Angels.
He's a player for the Royals.
He is...
There! We saved baseball!
We saved baseball! We certainly have improved it locally. Shohei Ohtani is no longer a baseball player for the Los Angeles Angels. Shohei Ohtani now, when I am elected president, Shohei Ohtani is an ambassador for Major League Baseball. Let me divide 162 by 30 really quick. We're going to end up with definitely some odd rounding. We'll figure that one out. Maybe get some off days for him. Shohei Ohtani plays 5 games per year for each team in Major League Baseball. Every team pays him $5 million... every year, $1 million per game. So we're gonna go ahead and just make it 60 and give him $160 and give him some time off, because that divides even more. Well, divides more evenly, I guess. $150 divides evenly into 30 to 5. So he gets 12 games off. He plays 150 games. $150 million $5 million per each team, $1 million per game, 5 games per team. Plus, Major League Baseball can pay him another $150 million just to get him a nice round $300 million annually.
Are they also paying for his Tommy John surgery at the end of the month?
He's not going to pitch every game.
Okay.
But with, here's the thing, Beards. Oh, this is perfect. He's going to pitch once for every team. Because it's five games per team. So,
that works.
One start, four position player appearances. Maybe DH is one of them, you know? And now we've saved baseball. Tell me you wouldn't sell out Kauffman for all five of the Ohtani Royals games. Not with him as an Angel playing against the Royals, but being able to sell Ohtani Royals jerseys. Every team gets five games of Ohtani. This is a deeply impractical idea, but after I've said it out loud, I love it. This is the only thing I want to happen now. And maybe you end up deputizing a few players per year on this. And obviously, yeah, he's just not allowed to get hurt, but I'm guessing, I mean, I don't know, whatever his alien ligaments are, probably don't get hurt. Technology now, we could probably replace his cyborg parts pretty easily. I mean, we're getting, giving him 12 games off, I mean. Will he be traveling more than other teams? Sure, but we could try to come up with reasonable, you know, that makes his travel the least difficult. He might play, think about this, you get some series here, Royals, White Sox, and Kauffman. Maybe his five-game run with the Royals ends mid-series. He just pops over, and now he's playing for the White Sox in Kauffman.
No, here's what you do. So, we'll start this out. He starts the season with the Angels.
Yep.
The Braves come to town for a series.
Sure.
So he plays out with the Angels. Then he leaves with the Braves,
yep,
to go wherever they're doing.
Yep.
Plays with the Braves at their place. Then he just goes with whoever they were playing.
Yeah.
He just kind of bounces around that way.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't have to be five consecutive games. It can really just, as long as it's five total, maybe it's three games here, two games there. Just whatever works out travel-wise. You want to get into play in home stadiums and all of that. We can work out some of the details here. But I've really alarmed myself by realizing how much I do think this idea would totally revitalize the sport of baseball. Because every team gets to claim him a little bit. You would have 30 fan bases that have home Ohtani jerseys. Let him play in the all-powder blues. At the very least, his Angels contract is almost up, right? I can't believe it's March 22nd. We're talking about Shohei Ohtani. No one is more surprised by this than I am.
And saving baseball.
And saving baseball. That one we usually save until the summer. But Rob Manfred already did, so guess that segment's over. Okay, so Ohtani this year is making $1 million, or making $30 million. And then it looks like he's an unrestricted free agent after this season. Here's my amendment, okay?
Who else could sign him?
Here's my amendment. John Sherman, if you want that downtown baseball stadium, I've got an idea for you. The house that Sho built. In his unrestricted free agency season, he doesn't sign with a team. He signs with baseball. Every team pays him $5 million for five games with your team. Major League Baseball itself pays him $150 million. We call it the Shohei Ohtani clause. And then that system goes into place. And here's the thing. Here's where this goes absolutely next level, Beards. Work with me on this one. Because this is his free agent year, and he's being paid by each team individually and by Major League Baseball as a whole, it's also a de facto recruiting tour. Every team gets five games to convince Ohtani that they are the organization that he should sign with for 2025 and beyond. It's basically The Bachelor for baseball. You've got a reality show. Let the cameras follow Ohtani around. We're doing the F1, the golf. We've got quarterbacks now. This is all the rage. The behind the scenes, true story, the hard knocks, whatever. Camera crew follows Ohtani around as he goes team to team to team to team throughout Major League Baseball over the course of a season, plays five games as a member of each team. And then at the end of the season, he gets like a week. Teams can submit their offers, and then he picks the winner. And if he decides to go back to the Angels, we do it again. because that one's not allowed. They get their final.
That's a good clause.
They get their final five games with Ohtani in this circumstance. There will be no re-signing. I have completely talked myself into this idea being tremendous. So far, I haven't heard anybody with anything bad to say about it. So I'm going to go ahead and say that's a winner. It really was a blast last night. I would love to find more moments for baseball to feel high leverage and high octane and high energy and like there are stakes attached to it. It's tough to do unless you're watching the Ohtani offer. Shohei the money. There it is. Done. Got it. Took me a second. Had to work through it. Shohei the money. Put it on Netflix. Put it on whatever streaming service wants to pay Shohei Ohtani the most money. Boom. We've saved baseball. We've saved baseball and the regular season hasn't even started yet. I think that's a new record.
You're in the zone.
Let's save baseball. We're in a rain delay. We're in a rain delay during the MLB playoffs. Let's save baseball. Here's how I want to save baseball. Everybody does crack.
With Jason Anderson.
Perfect! We've saved Major League Baseball! The kids are into it again!
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Baseball saved, but the rest of the show will predominantly be about other things here today in the zone. The whole hour has basically been about me just single-handedly solving the sports problems for you. Joshua Briscoe, Beards McFly with you here in the zone. Jason Anderson back tomorrow. We will run the gamut of basketball things. Plus, I do want to talk a little more about some Chiefs offseason things where I just want to make sure everyone's got kind of the right perspective on some of the moves that have been happening recently and why the Chiefs are doing the things they're doing. A lot of our conversations this week and last couple of weeks have reflected that, I think, but still some questions out there and some interesting things as we continue to wait for wide receiver news and all of that. But we'll talk to Kevin Flaherty of 24/7 Sports here coming up in about 10 minutes about everything college basketball through March Madness. I want to, of course, talk about K-State, KU, and Mizzou and what those teams have done or did do now in the past for KU and Mizzou to see their seasons in the way that they did. And we will we'll hear from K-State themselves around noon, expecting to hear from some of the players. Certainly would expect probably Marquise Noel, Keontae Johnson, Desi Stills. I don't know. We'll see. I'm not sure who the players will be. And then also, of course, Jerome Tang. We'll speak to the media from New York, so we will we'll hear from them a little bit after the top of the noon hour, and then again, Kevin Flaherty will join us to talk some more college ball in about 10 minutes. The real short version of my little just keep this in mind Chiefs take for everyone right now. And this doesn't necessarily apply to the wide receiver position, so if you're looking for soothing there, I unfortunately don't think I can give it to you. But the thing where, like, yesterday the Chiefs bring back Derek Nnadi, who is, you know, a treat to have in Kansas City. From the jet ski stories to the Casey Pet Project and the other things he does to sponsor animals who need homes in the area. He's just a wonderful guy to have around. And a good football player. He's not an impact pass rusher, and he might not be your top choice for run stuffer, middle of the defense type of guy. Seen lots of people saying, oh, I just would like to see the Chiefs upgrade there in the beef department of their interior defensive line. Keeping in mind that Charles Minnehue is going to be on the interior for pass rushing, I think, quite a bit. I was surprised, really, when in Seth Kaiser's film review for him to get to the point of saying he had way more success on the interior as a pass rusher than he did off the edge. I think that's fascinating. We'll see where that ultimately puts him. But for the most part, the moves the Chiefs are making right now, this is certainly true for Nnadi. It's true for Tershawn Wharton. It's true even with it being a 2-year deal for Charles Minnehue. The Mike Edwards signing. Drew Tranquil, we talked about a little bit yesterday, and that it's kind of weird just positional fit-wise as a spot the Chiefs have already invested a ton in at linebacker. Where is Tranquil going to fit on the field? All of that. But what the Chiefs have done here and have continued to do, and it's something we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, something Adam Teicher and I have talked about the last couple of weeks, the Chiefs are in a position now where they are limiting their glaring holes. Because you don't want to end up in that spot where your pick card is all but submitted for you. Where you just, you know the position you're drafting for. Anything else is going to leave you vulnerable somewhere. I would ask you if the Chiefs can win a Super Bowl with Derek Nnadi being their top run-stuffing defensive tackle. But it would be a foolish thing for me to have to ask because they've done it. Twice, really, right? I mean, I think Nnadi was the top snap getter on the interior, again, in terms of the non-pass rushing downs, but just kind of as one as a run stuffer, huge body in the middle and all of that. Is there room to improve there? Absolutely. But that's what the flexibility of the Chiefs front office's strategy provides. Sign your veterans to one-year deals or two-year deals where you've got some flexibility. Even a guy like Minshew, who still has a lot of growth he can have in his ceiling on a two-year deal, if it doesn't work out, it's not some five-year back-breaking, cap-breaking deal. Like even like Frank Clark's, who, again, you know, they got a lot of production out of, and they were certainly bringing him in to be a franchise guy, not just a filler piece or whatever it may be. But I would much rather the Chiefs go into the draft with Derek Nnadi in the middle than no one who has done it before in the middle. Not just because I don't know if rookies are always going to be ready to start by day one. They're very frequently not. But because you do not want to end up in a spot where you need the most pro-ready guy you can get as highly in the draft as you can get him to fill one of those positions. Because again, it even changes what you draft for in the aspect of how ready is this guy. George Karlaftis was not the highest ceiling edge rusher in last year's draft class. He really wasn't even the highest ceiling guy when he was selected. Like Ajabo went in the second, right? The Michigan pass rusher who the Ravens ended up with, who had the knee injury at his pro day. I want to make sure I get his draft spot right. 45th overall pick. David Ajabo might have had a higher ceiling than George Karlaftis, but you needed a guy who would play in his rookie season. Ajabo played a tiny bit for the Ravens last year. I don't know exactly how much, but it was minimal. The Chiefs needed a guy who could be on the edge reliably, ideally for 20 games, which ultimately he was, who can eat a bunch of snaps and play NFL caliber football. The Chiefs really needed that from a defensive end. If that would have had to have been Carlos Dunlap, maybe it could have been, but it would have been tough. And so they draft for a need and still get a good player there. You're going to draft for need and for positions that you want to continue investing in regardless. But you don't want to have to draft out of desperation. And so if you have a good roster built, you can take swings for what you think might be great players. Ronald Jones, who was a somewhat heralded signing at the time last offseason, ended up getting jumped by Isaiah Pacheco, who the Chiefs would have had no way of knowing for sure they would be able to select. You can't pass on Ronald Jones in the offseason because you know you're going to get Isaiah Pacheco in the seventh round. Even if you're really confident in what he's going to be, and they couldn't have been all that confident because they waited, and they were able to wait, and it was an incredible draft pick. But ultimately, you keep your options open by doubling down at positions. The contract for Nick Allegretti. The Chiefs gave him real money. We talked about this, I think it was Matt Derrick on Friday. Before they drafted Creed Humphrey, they signed Austin Ryder. Or excuse me, they signed Austin Blythe. Ryder was the Super Bowl, and then they brought Ryder back again. Because you want to make sure you have depth. Austin Blythe could have started for the Chiefs at center, But then they had Creed Humphrey sitting right there for them to select in the second round. Well, now you've got a guy who can make sure you got a little redundancy there. To make sure your veteran could play that spot if the rookie's not ready. Injuries happen. You don't have to draft that position at that spot. And again, this year, even if they haven't had the splash signings at new positions, you've certainly seen them keep their options open heading into the draft. And I think that's a really important thing to do.